Harris back to pass. Looks end zone. Has his man. Has the touchdown. Terrence Tolliver. Got a shot here. Did he make it? Yes, he did. What a catch. Oh, my. Luke Tasker touchdown.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, it is the first episode that we get to do where we're talking about actual football. But before we get to the game, I want to share my thoughts on BMO Field. As you know, and as everyone out there knows, I decided to attend the preseason game between the Ticats and the Argos at BMO Field because I want to see what BMO Field was all about. Coming away from it, it's awesome, dude. It's really awesome. This place, I think, is going to be the first step in really making the Argos a force in the Toronto sports scene. The atmosphere was fantastic, and this was for a preseason game. Fans were excited. Like, they were engaged in the product on the field, and the big takeaway when it comes to the fans that were there is a lot of them were really young. Like, I'm talking people in their 20s, people in their teens. There were a lot of kids sitting around where I was, and they just seemed to be really into it. There's this one kid who was in front of us near the end of the game. He whips his shirt off and starts spinning it around. There was a group of kids further down in the section we were in, did the same thing. Like, it was kind of really cool to see.
Yeah, it's a good thing here. You know, I've been waiting for years and years and years for the Argos to get a good home, and now it's happened. And to hear that there's a excited fan base, a young fan base there to enjoy the game is really good to hear. And it's just preseason. You know, we saw some pictures on Twitter that it didn't look like a huge crowd, but you know, it's just a preseason game, and the regular season game is going to be, I'm sure it's going to be sold out. I'm sure people are going to have a great time. And then just by word of mouth, you know, if people go to the first game and have a good time, they're going to tell their friends that it was a great time. And then hopefully the next game, there'll be a big crowd as well. And it'll just continue from that. So I'm really glad to hear that the atmosphere is awesome. You know, the stadium is a nice stadium. You know, I've heard a little bit of complaints about the seats, but you know, that's just a minor thing really. So I'm just overjoyed that the Argos are out of the Sky Dome and into a good place for them to play with a smaller capacity. And I'm just really excited about the whole thing.
They were so into it. They were doing the thing where they pound on the metal below the seats. I guess it's the first row, and it creates that sound. I think they do it a lot at TFC games. They were doing that in this game. Yeah, so the seats, I know you said you heard about the seats not being that great, and I kind of agree. They sort of reminded me of, what's the best way to put it? Like, you know when you go to a restaurant and you get booster seats for children? They kind of looked like that a little bit. They were plastic. They were hard. The aisles where you sit, there's not a lot of leg room. It was very strange, especially comparing it to Tim Hortons Field. But that, to me, is not going to be a deterrent for people to get excited about going to these games and about this team. And it was some of the small things. Like, when I used to go to the Sky Dome to watch games, you wanted to get a large collectible cup sort of thing. It was a Blue Jays cup. This, you go to BMO, it was $8 for this collectible Argos cup. And you got free soda refills. Like, you got free pop refills. So it's like, for $8, and yeah, it's an Argos cup, and it felt a little weird drinking out of an Argos emblazoned cup. That's a pretty good deal. Like, I just think that everything about this, like, I was on the side with the roof, and it was a hot day out, but we were covered. The breeze was coming in. It was nice and cool on a hot day. You know, my real complaint, the only complaint I really have, is the sound system didn't seem to work. We could not hear a thing. Sitting where we were, we didn't know what the announcers were saying. We kind of just had to watch the game as if there was no announcers, which isn't a huge deal, but I think come the regular season, I don't know if this was one of those things where they just didn't know that it wasn't working or what have you, but that's something that they would definitely have to fix. But again, seats and a sound system error, that's all my complaints that I have about this. Just all in all, I think this BMO thing is going to be great for the Argos, and you can just kind of feel that this is the turning point. This is, like I said, step one in making this team something special. And as much as we hate the team on the field, them being successful off the field is great. This is how they're going to get there. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, you got to give, I think a lot of the credit has to go to the new owners because I think that they're really pushing in advertising. You see the new TV commercials and, I think they're doing a good job so far. There's a lot more work to do, that's for sure. But yeah, you talk about BMO and that's the first step. And providing a good place to play that's exciting to go to is huge for them. So I'm really excited for them. And, I just wanted to ask you, is there, what's the signage like? Does it feel like an Argos home game, like a home field, or is it just, they're playing in TFC's place? Was there signage? Was it visible that it was the Argos home field?
From where we were sitting on some of the like the concrete that separates the levels, there were blue banners with Argos logos that said, "This is Argos football." There wasn't a ton of Argos stuff, like advertising wise, in the stadium. But then I read an interview with, I want to say it's their CEO, Michael Copeland, who used to work for the league, and he said that they didn't go full out with putting Argos stuff up for this game because it was only a preseason game. Apparently, this upcoming the home opener against the Ticats in about a week now. Apparently, there's going to be a lot more of that there, but there was a little bit. But it was still very much like the seats are still red. It still has like soccer stuff. But this again, not anything major to quibble over. Honestly, I think that they're going to get this right. You mentioned the new ownership. I think that's where this is going to be really successful. And yeah, it wasn't in your face marketing at the game this time. But I think if Copeland's being truthful, I think we'll see more of that a week Thursday.
Yeah, that's all that matters is that it feels like a Argos, home stadium when they play. When they don't play, it doesn't really matter if they take the signage down. I'm sure they will for TFC games. It's not a big deal. It's just such a great thing that they don't have to worry about the Blue Jays schedule. Like TFC schedule, they have to work around that, obviously, but it's not the same as a Major League Baseball team. I mean, they're not playing 162 games a year, 81 games at home. So they're gonna benefit from playing with a soccer team compared to playing in the same stadium as a baseball team. So that's gonna be a great thing for them too to get that a good schedule. Are the best schedule that they possibly can for the Argos.
Yeah, we're going to see next year what the Argos schedule, a normal Argos schedule, will look like. Because this year, with the construction at BMO, you had the TFC was later and later in starting their home schedule. So the Argos schedule this year isn't great. It's still a lot better. I don't think there's a many Tuesday nights or Wednesday night games for Toronto this year. So that's really good. But I do think that, yeah, coming next season, you're going to see a much more steady Argos home schedule. And again, like you said, I think that's going to be great for the team.
Now, enough about the Argos because this is, a Ticats podcast.
Yeah,
So
let's get into the game, Mike.
yeah,
So
yes.
you didn't really get a chance. It wasn't on TV, it wasn't streamed, it was on the radio, but you didn't
No.
really get a chance to catch much of it, correct?
No, I was at work. On my breaks, when the game was on, I tuned into TSN 1150 and caught a little bit of it, but nothing to really take a grasp of what actually happened on the field.
Okay, so I'll give you my impressions of what I saw, a lot of which I wrote in my recap article for Three Down Nation. So the Ticats obviously lost this game to Toronto 25-16. It's a preseason game, so the scores doesn't really matter all that much. It's more of what you saw to the players. The big negative that I took away from this game is, especially early, a lot of mental errors hurt this team. John Chick, for instance, took an offside penalty on a second and long that made it second and short that the Argos converted and then would go on to score a touchdown on that drive. The touchdown they scored on that drive, it looked to me like it was a defensive breakdown in the secondary because Vidal Hazelton, who scored the TD, was wide open on the right side. It was kind of ridiculous how wide open he was. It looked like there was a miscommunication somewhere. Alex Hoffman-Ellis, who for the most part looked really good, and I think he's the guy that's going to be the Ticats starting middle linebacker this season. He took a really stupid, unnecessary roughness penalty. I believe it was Logan Kilgore was still the quarterback at the time. He scrambles out of the pocket. He runs out. He slides. He's like long since slid. It's a good beat or two. And then Hoffman-Ellis doesn't, like, it's not a huge hit, but he does kind of dip his shoulder into him, takes the flag. I think the Argos had extended their drive because I think it would have been third down. They would have punted. Extends the drive. I'm pretty sure the Argos kicked a field goal. And then the last kind of mental error was there was a massive brain fart by the special teams on a third quarter punt. What happened was Ticats players collided with each other. They let the ball kind of sit on the ground, and the Argos punter came up and scooped it up. And, as we know, he's not offside. Like, he can recover a kick. So it was one of those things where I think it was that happened in the third quarter. So I think that was something where you saw the players. It was the newer guys who are told, oh, no yards, no yards, no yards, but don't entirely, don't get that one. You know, it's a little nuance to the game that some people aren't. We saw it last year with the Ticats. How many onside punts did they recover last year? So sometimes guys don't always know the exact rules. And I think that's more to do with that. But these players have to got, if they want to make the team, they got to learn these rules. So yeah, mental errors kind for me was the biggest negative takeaway from this game.
Yeah, I guess that you'd have to expect that. It's a preseason, and like you mentioned, the new guys, I mean, that's a, you know, 5 yards, 5 yards, 5 yards, but except for the punter, you know, that's a, you know, it's hard to remember all these new rules that you come up from the States, and you don't know the nuances of the Canadian game. But yeah, the mental errors have to be gone before the regular season starts, because that's a killer, right? So hopefully get them out of the way in the preseason, and then moving forward into the regular season, we can not get as many penalties because of mental errors.
So a couple other things. These are more positives. There's a few other negatives that we'll talk about, but I want to get into some positives. I don't want this to feel like the team didn't do well. There were some things out there that it was a preseason game, so I was able to focus on things that I wouldn't normally focus on during a game when you're trying to follow the play and see stuff like that. So I spent a lot of time looking in the trenches. I was looking at the defensive linemen. I was looking at the offensive linemen. And I came away with D-line, John Chickman, that motor that everyone talks about, that high motor that he got, it came as advertised. The very first defensive snap of the game, he blows by his whoever was blocking him. I don't know who the Argos had in there at the time, because I couldn't hear who was even on the field, and we were kind of far away, so I couldn't really see numbers. We didn't have a depth chart there, so it was kind of difficult. But whoever it was, he blows by him and came very close to getting a sack, but Kilgore stepped up in the pocket and made a nice throw. But Chick, for the most of the time he was on there, just was just go, 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 go. It was very nice to see. Delano Johnson, who used to be with the Argos, that came over to the Ticats. He was assigned for their mini camp, and he's apparently had a wonderful training camp. Was an absolute stud against the Argos, constantly making moves, constantly getting in people's faces. He was all over the place. I believe he even had a sack in this game. He looks like a guy who possibly could be the guy to start opposite Ted Laurent in that defensive line. Now, he can play both defensive tackle, defensive end, so he's got that versatility there, which is great, but I really liked what I saw to him. And the last defensive lineman that I was really impressed with was Lyndon Gaydosh, who got the start because Ted Laurent didn't play, both due to injury and because first preseason game, you don't really see a lot of the starters play. But he was constantly plugging in the middle, constantly taking on two offensive linemen at the same time, and looked really good in doing so. So if this is sort of the push for him to become the guy that we all hoped he could be based on being the number one overall pick in the draft and all that other sorts of stuff, the Ticats could have a wonderful defensive line despite all those veteran departures that we saw to Toronto and elsewhere. I was really impressed with what the D-line did, and they looked really good, man. They looked really good.
Well, that's a relief, because like you just mentioned, I mean, all the players that left to go to Toronto, it had to be a question mark, the defensive line. And with Gaydosh, you know, there's been so much high expectations for him since he was drafted, and he's never really lived up to it just because of his injury troubles. But to hear that he's, you know, at the top of his game early in the preseason is a big relief, because he's gonna have a big part in this defensive line, you know, rotation wise, and you know, maybe even starting a couple of games. And with the other guy, like with John Chick, you had to have questions about him too, because he's getting up there in age. He was let go by his team, that he was a loyal member of the Riders for so many years, and he was just let go. I know that was because of the new regime, Chris Jones coming in, but to hear that he still has that motor and that he must be so motivated this year to prove that he still has it. So to hear that he still has that get up and go is a huge deal. This guy's going to bring everything he has every game. I'm positive of that. So yeah, I'm just glad to hear that the defensive line looked good, because over the years we've had such high expectations for the D-line, and you know, they didn't really live up to those expectations. And maybe that this addition of the D-line is going to be, you know, be better than the years before, even though we've lost so many players. So I hope that we can get pressure on the quarterback all season long and get sacks and just be a great D-line and really contribute to the overall defense for the Ticats.
So I also got to look at the offensive line, like I mentioned, and they maybe were the most impressive unit that I saw on the team the entire game. The starting unit, the one that had a majority of the starters, although they were missing two starters, Mike Filer and Ryan Bomben both didn't play, they looked really good. When they were in there against the Argos number ones, they were mostly in pass protection. The team did not run a ton, especially in the first half. But when Jeremiah Mazzoli was back there, he had a ton of time. He was able to make his reads, to make his throws. Mazzoli himself really impressed me, even though he had very little playing time. I think he only completed 9 passes. The Argos had an 8.5-minute drive to start the game, so Mazzoli didn't see a ton of time back there. But when he was back there, he looked very comfortable. He looked very calm. He looked like the switch has been flipped, so to speak. But I think a lot of that has to do with the offensive line being so darn impressive. They did not let anyone come within 10 feet of Jeremiah Mazzoli. At least that's how it felt when I was watching them. They just looked really, really impressive. And if the D-line is impressive and the O-line is impressive, as we all know as veteran football fans, you win games in the trenches. If this offensive line can be this good with only 3/5 of the starters being there, I'm really excited to see what they can do when Filer and Bomben get back in the lineup.
Yeah, no kidding. The importance of the offensive line is just huge, as any football fan knows. So to hear that they're doing well is a good thing. Is a good thing too. And they got that, you know, this offensive line has been intact for the last couple of years, so they're gonna play well together. So, you know, and with the addition of Simmons coming back, I think they have some pretty good depth. And, you know, with Revenberg, the new draft choice, what did you see out of him? Did he play quite a bit? Or
he was fantastic. I focused a lot on him once I noticed that the number twos were in there, because he's a guy that I really wanted to see. A lot of hype going on with this guy. He did not disappoint, dude. He was really good. Now, to temper expectations, it was against the twos and threes of the Argos, but he did not let anyone buy him. He was strong. I don't really know how to describe it, but I just, when I was focusing on him, he looked really darn good. And this could be a kid that he probably is not going to see the starting lineup much, but the future looks bright for Brandon Revenberg.
Yeah, and I never heard of him before the draft, but just goes to show that, you know, one preseason game doesn't make a career, but you just got to put your faith in the Ticats scouting department and Ken Austin to make the right choices. And, you know, like you said, he looked great. So could be a big possibility that it was the right choice to go with him as a surprise pick at number 3 in the draft.
Yeah, sure looks like it was. Mercer Timmis was another rookie that I was looking forward to seeing. He was really good on special teams, which is how he's going to make this club. So before I go into sort of telling you that he wasn't that great on offense, I got to make sure that I say that he was really good on special teams, and that's going to be the majority of his role. But on offense, he was a little underwhelming. He had a couple of bad drops. There was one play where he was in the backfield and whiffed on a block and Ja'Cory Harris got hit. It wasn't the stellar debut that I was hoping for, but there's still some good there. I tried to look at some other rookies. Mike Jones, of course, wanted to look at him, but he didn't. He was playing wide side wide receiver, and I don't even think had a pass thrown to him, so it's hard to judge how well he did. Some other things, we got to talk about Jeff Matthews, because I don't know how to feel about this guy, because he had the lone touchdown pass for the Ticats on an absolutely beautiful play. It was a broken play. The pass rush got in his face. He rolled out and he found Tyquan Underwood deep downfield for a 50-yard touchdown. It was really beautiful. And then in the very next series, they're driving a little bit. They get near or into the red zone. And what does he do? Throws an interception. And this seems to be the problem with Matthews, is that he'll have these moments of brilliance, and then he'll have these moments where you just shake your head. He had 2 really bad interceptions. There were times when he was there where he looked really hesitant to throw the ball, and there were times when he holds on to the ball too long. I want this kid to succeed. I really do. I liked some stuff that I saw from him last year, but it looks kind of like he's plateaued a little bit, almost like he's reached where he's going to be. I hope that's not the case. I hope, you know, we thought the same with Jeremiah Mazzoli when he first came into the game for the Ticats a few years ago, and he was just chucking it up there and not really playing the game the way it's supposed to be played, just kind of slinging it and hoping for the best. We've seen him turn it around. I hope Matthews can turn it around, but this was not... If there's a competition between Mazzoli and Matthews for the starting quarterback job, it's pretty much over, and I would be shocked if Jeremiah Mazzoli is not the starting quarterback week 1 in Toronto.
Yeah, so would I. I mean, just what we've seen from Mazzoli in the playoffs last year, and, you know, Matthews, like you said, he's so up and down. He needs more experience. I think we can't give up on him yet. I hope he's the number 3. I'm pretty sure he will be, and just, you know, give him time to get more experience, to try to, you know, not eliminate, but cut down on those turnovers that makes us worry, you know? I think he has some potential. I was really high on him in the preseason game last year. He looked really, really good. You know, he played with Austin in college, and he could be a really good quarterback, or he could be a complete dud. We just don't know yet. We just haven't seen enough of him to really know. And, you know, I'd give him some more time, and maybe he can, you know, cut down on those turnovers that he's becoming famous for.
Yeah, I don't think he has any worries about not making the team. No. Ja'Cory Harris and Jake Waters both played, and neither of those guys really did much of anything. Harris went 1 for 6 for 4 yards, and he had a scramble, 1 rush for 8 yards. Waters came in, he was 3 for 5 for 7 yards, and he had a designed run called. I'm pretty sure it was on his first play that he was in there. That he picked up 10 yards, got the first down, so it was nice. But I don't really think... I think if we're looking at the quarterback pecking order, including Zach Kolaris, we obviously have Kolaris at the top. Then I think solidly at number 2 is Mazzoli. Solidly at number 3 is Matthews. And then we have Harris and Waters kind of both fighting for that fourth quarterback spot. But with Kolaris hurt, pecking order moves up. But yeah, so it's the quarterback depth in Hamilton isn't great. I think Matthews could be okay if he's, you know, forced into action, but I'm hoping Mazzoli can stay healthy and continue on that train of that path that he was on after his benching in the East semifinal. I hope that's the player we see going forward until Zach Kolaris is ready to come back and lead this football team.
Yeah, if he's the player that he was in that Ottawa game, I mean, we're gonna win some games with him. He, you know, the Toronto game in the playoffs he was okay. He wasn't great, but that Ottawa game, I'm just hoping that, you know, he played that game so well, and then that he got over the hump in that game, and that's how he's going to play from now on. And if he does, you know, like I said a couple seconds ago, we're going to win, you know, more games than we lose when he's at the helm. So if he plays how he did in that Ottawa game, I'm really excited for the start of the season. And we've been talking about how the Ticats might get off to a slow start. Well, maybe not. Maybe Mazzoli gets in there and we get off to a really good start, and we're in a really good position when Kolaris comes back. That would be, you know, amazing if that happened.
Yeah, that's obviously the best case scenario, and it's entirely possible. We'll have to wait and see. We don't know right now. The last thing I want to touch on in this game is we do have a kicking battle going on with this team, and it certainly looked like in this game that Brett Maher took the lead in that kicking battle. He made both of his field goals. He also outpunted the former punter from Alabama, Cody Mandel. Mandel wasn't terrible, but you could definitely see that place kicking is not his forte. He shorted a kickoff that came back for a big return. He missed a 50-yard field goal, which is not easy, but it looked ugly. Like, it was like spinning sideways. It was a line drive kick. It was not a good field goal. But then he came back later in the game and nails a 51-yard field goal. So he clearly is a project when it comes to place kicking. And Maher was good on both his field goals, was a fairly good punter. He had one punt that he pinned really nicely against the Argos, kind of within the 10-yard line. It was a very nice coffin corner punt. He had a punt earlier in the game that he sent down the middle of the field, which you cannot do. But I think all in all, Maher had a much better game than Mandel. So if I was to guess who's sort of in the lead in that, I'd say it was the former Ottawa kicker.
Now, there's a kicker in Winnipeg. I think Castillo is his name, or Castillo. I'm not, and it's something like that.
Sergio Castillo.
Yes, he looked incredible in the preseason games. He's making, you know, long field goals, right down the middle. What do you think about if he gets released? Because they have Medlock there. What do you think about bringing him in possibly?
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm fairly certain he was here with the Ticats for a short spell during Austin's tenure. I'm not sure if it was 2013, 2014, 2015, but I'm fairly certain that he was either on the practice roster or he was in camp at one point with this team. So he's familiar with Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I saw his numbers and he did look pretty impressive. It's entirely possible that he could be brought in at some point, perhaps. Because like you said, he's not making Winnipeg. That's not going to happen. I don't know if he's been released yet, but there's no chance that he makes that roster over just a Medlock. It's we can put that out. He was basically out there. He's in camp to showcase himself to other teams. When he gets released, that someone might come and pick him up. But yeah, I could see that. But honestly, and I know this is going to sound crazy based on how we talked before, I was kind of impressed with Brett Maher. I thought he was, I obviously we're not going to be as comfortable with any kicker that we have been the last couple of years, but I think he can do the job. And I don't know if they really need to go look at a kicker quite yet.
Well, that's a good thing because I was kind of worried about Maher with his, with the numbers coming into the Ticats. It wasn't very impressive, his short career with Ottawa. So yeah, I'm hoping that the preseason game is an indication of what he's going to be like in the regular season, and we won't have to replace him or go out and look for another kicker like Castillo in Winnipeg. So yeah, if he can do the job, if he's going to make those big field goals, going to be a good punter, then I'm all for him staying with his team and being the starting kicker.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't see out of either kicker that I wish I would have was kicking into the wind. They were both kicking with the wind at their back. So at one point, Austin said after the game that they were going to send out, and they did send him out. They sent out Brett Maher to kick a 62-yard field goal because the wind was at his back, and he made a 67-yard field goal in warmups. I would have liked to have seen how they would have handled the wind blowing into their face, simply because that's going to happen in Hamilton. Hamilton is notorious for having some pretty crazy winds, so I would have liked to have seen that. Maybe we'll see that this Friday when they take on the Red Blacks. But aside from that, I was impressed with him. I was less impressed with Mandel, but first game of his pro career, you kind of got to lean towards the veteran in this situation. He's been there. He knows the game. He's been in the CFL before. So I'm not really surprised that Maher outperformed Mandel.
Yeah, neither am I, especially with Mandel's, he was just a punter in Alabama, I guess, or
Yeah,
he
yeah.
didn't
He
really,
only, he
yeah,
hasn't he
so.
hasn't kicked field goals since high school.
So yeah, that's Maher's gonna have the edge in the place kissing, place kicking for sure.
That is a totally different game, place kissing.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm just glad to hear you had a good game.
So, as much fun as it has been to talk about an actual game, and now we get to do this for what, about 20 some odd weeks going forward, it's awesome. There is still some off the field stuff that we have to talk about. The big one is Brandon Banks. He's back. Banks, he's home. He can't. He, I believe, he was back Friday night. He was on the sidelines during the Argos Ticats game at BMO. He was back on the practice field on Monday. He was at the community open house the team had on Sunday. This is a very big monkey off the back of this team. You got to be nothing but happy that Brandon Banks is home.
Absolutely. He has a new restructured deal. I believe it's the same deal basically, but some more money up front. That's not the reason that he was not in camp, but good to hear if he's, if he's happy with the new deal, then that's a good thing. And it's just great to see him back. He's the one of the big names on this Ticats team. He's a big star, and missing training camp, a lot of training camp kind of sucks, but to have him back in the fold is a great thing for the Ticats for sure.
Yeah, we were worried just last week that, oh, when's he going to be here? When's he going to be here? And yeah, we have to stress, he did get a restructured deal with more upfront money, but it's the exact same amount of money. It's the exact same length of the contract. He didn't get anything extra. This was still not a contract holdout. So anyone who's out there thinking that Banks is unhappy in Hamilton and this is like a Chris Williams situation all over again, can stick it where the sun don't shine, because that's not the case.
Yeah, this guy's happy to be a Ticat. He loves the team. I'm pretty sure he loves the city. So he's all about the Ticats. And yeah, this is nothing like the Chris Williams deal a couple of years ago.
Well, we talked about it last week when I said he was at the celebrity charity softball game a week or 2 weeks before camp opened. And you don't see guys who are in contract disputes with teams show up for these community events. And he was there for that. So I knew when this started thinking about that, maybe he's unhappy with his deal. I knew it was bunk at the time. All the indications are that it was a family issue. And for instance, Bear Woods, the Montreal linebacker I just saw today, he has been put on the suspended list by the Alouettes because he has gone back home to deal with a family issue. So these guys have families and they're far away from their families. And Banks said himself, he's like, I love football, but my family comes first. And I don't think we can fault him for that. But the important part is he's back. He's fielding punts. He's playing offense. He's going to be in the lineup against Ottawa. How awesome would it be if the opening of the game, you have Chad Owens and Brandon Banks back there on the opening kickoff, and Banks, he takes one to the house? I know it's a preseason game, but I think everyone who is sort of like a little, even Ticats fans are a little, I don't know about Banks. Is he fully committed? He does that, I think all bets are off and everyone's happy again.
Absolutely. And I'm just interested to see what they do with Banks and Owens back there. Like, I'm pretty sure they're going to get creative with it, some reverses, some fake reverses, all that kind of stuff. So with two guys back there that can bring it back to the house, I'm interested to see what they come up with on special teams.
Oh, we know Jeff Reinbold's got some tricks up his sleeve. Maybe the best special teams coordinator in the league right now. He's my favorite, that's for darn sure. But
Absolutely.
You know he's got something up his sleeve to get these two guys. He said as much when we were talking to him a few months ago.
Yeah.
That he's going to get these guys in. It's going to be fun. It's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's not the only bit of news. The Ticats, like every other team in the CFL, has made a few transactions over the last couple of days to get their roster down to the required minimum going forward for the rest of the preseason. They have released 7 players. They released running back Michael Ford, defensive tackle Zach Anderson, defensive end Antonio Coleman, offensive lineman Brandon Washington, wide receiver Patrick Robertson, linebacker Troy Davis, and defensive back Chase Minifield. Now, out of these guys, the ones that stand out to me are Ford, Anderson, Davis, and Minifield. Ford was presumed to be the backup to CJ Gable this year. He played in a few games last year, had a really good game against Calgary, as I remember. Looked to be kind of a guy that could be, he probably wouldn't see the game day roster, but he could be a guy that if Gable got hurt, he was going to fill in for him if that, you know, knock on wood, hopefully it doesn't happen, but if it happened. Anderson was a guy who's got like 3 seasons worth of experience in the CFL with Winnipeg, but it looked like, I think, this is just coming from me, it's pure speculation, that the addition of Delano Johnson and how great he has played kind of made Anderson expendable in a way, because Johnson is more versatile, can play both end and tackle, whereas Anderson's only a tackle. And I think Delano Johnson kind of took people by surprise by how good he was. And Davis had started the year as the team's middle linebacker. He was started camp as the starting middle linebacker, but over he got hurt, and then Alex Hoffman Ellis has taken it over. And I think, like I said earlier, that's the guy that we're going to see as the number one linebacker, number one middle linebacker for this team in the regular season. And Minifield, unfortunately, he got injured in the game against the Argos, and he was the guy that was starting in Delvin Bro's old spot at corner. So to lose him, the team was obviously high on him, but his obviously the injury looks to be pretty serious, probably would have kept him out for the year anyway. He was let go. Any kind of surprises on this list for you?
Well, basically what you listed, you know, I like the way that Michael Ford ran the ball last year. He was a powerful runner. He had some decent speed. I think he would have been a pretty good backup, but I'm not sure who they're thinking who's going to take over for that spot behind Gable. But I was a little bit surprised about that. And Anderson has experience in the CFL with the Bombers. He played pretty well for them in his 3 years, so I guess it's just a kind of a log jam at defensive tackle, and he was one of the casualties, but I think that he might get picked up somewhere else. And you know, with Minifield, it's just tough because, you know, training camp's so short in the CFL, and if you get injured, you're pretty much done, unless you're like a known commodity and experienced player that they know is going to make this team. So I feel bad for all those guys, but hopefully they they find a new spot in the CFL and continue their careers.
Yeah, I could see Ford finding a home elsewhere. I could see Anderson finding a home elsewhere as well. I think those guys are 2 talented players that I think would do well on teams that need them. But it looks to me that the running back position there is a young man whose first name is escaping me, but his last name is Sherman. And he looked, he got some reps against the Argos. Most of them were near the end of the game, but he looked to be pretty good. They have this guy, Darrell Scott, who looks like he's probably going to be the guy. He's very much similar to CJ Gable. Can catch, can block, can run. Maybe that's the guy that they're going to be looking at as that in break in case of emergency player. But we're going to have to wait and see. Maybe they decide Anthony Woodson and Mercer Timmis. Should they go with a Canadian? Like there's a lot of things that they could possibly do here. The big thing is that we hope that CJ Gable stays healthy and plays 15, 16, 18 games. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been waiting for a healthy season from CJ Gable since his rookie season, and we know what he can do. We know he's one of the best in the league if he's healthy. So he's a huge part of this Ticats offense, and for him to stay healthy would be a huge deal for them and would improve this team immensely.
Well, last year in training camp, he got hurt. He missed the first 4 weeks. He came back and had a monster game against the Saskatchewan Roughriders, if you remember. Then he gets hurt the very next game against the Argos, misses a bunch of time, comes back at the end of the season, and picked up kind of where he left off. We, like you said, we know what this guy can do when he's fully healthy. And if we can get, like Andy Fantuz, if we can get 14 to 16 and, you know, hopefully a full 18 games out of these guys, that offense is much better, and we know the production will be there.
Yeah, if he misses a big chunk of games this year, I'm not sure what's going to happen going forward, because, you know, as good as a player as he is, if he continues to get injured, and I know it's not his fault, it's just bad luck kind of thing, I don't know if he's going to be the starter of the Ticats next year and the years to come, because he just can't keep going this way if he's going to keep getting injured. So for him and for the organization, I hope he can stay healthy.
the Tie Cats made. Three other moves: they added Ja'Cory Harris, Damond Washington, and Evan Gill to the six-game injured list. Harris was hurt in the game against the Argos, and he was going for a shoulder x-ray or something the last couple of days. I guess it turned out to be a lot worse than they anticipated. Washington apparently got hurt in practice this week after the Argos game, and apparently it's a long-term injury. He was a big free agent signing, possible guy that could start. He was actually starting at the wide side spot, Courtney Stevens' old spot, while Steven moves to safety. That's where Damond Washington was starting. And again, the secondary takes another blow. And then Evan Gill, man, this is a guy that the team drafted really high. I think he was the 8th or 9th overall pick back in 2014. And he just can't seem to stay healthy and see the field. This is a guy that everyone was really high on coming out of the University of Manitoba in his draft year. And he's fallen behind. You know, the Tie Cats have a ton of talented Canadian defensive tackles. We have Ted Laurent, obviously. We talked about Lyndon Gaydosh. Michael Atkinson is apparently, from what I've been told at camp, has taken on more of a leadership role with this team. The coaches are really high on him. So the less Gill plays, the more he gets hurt, the less of a chance that this guy's going to stick around. The passport will keep him here. He's been 6 games. He hasn't been cut. So he's still going to stick around. But at some point, you got to get a return on this investment, or it's time to cut bait.
Yeah, he's gotta stay healthy for a bit. He's gotta be able to see the field a little bit, even on special teams, to show what he has, what his worth is. So yeah, I hope that he, after this 6th game, I hope he can come back and really stay healthy. And like you said, there's a lot of potential there, and we just haven't seen it yet. So he's gotta show what he has to be able to stick with this team.
So Ken Austin came out yesterday after he was asked about Ja'Cory Harris and said that if he was to be out for a long stretch of time, the team would be bringing in another quarterback. Right now, it looks like Jake Waters has assumed that number 3 quarterback role simply due to attrition, but the Tie Cats could bring in another quarterback. Do you think maybe we might see something with one of the guys that Montreal is going to inevitably release, or maybe a trade gets worked out there, low round draft pick for a guy? Or do you think maybe they'll look at someone on their neg list or a street free agent that's out there?
The Montreal thing is interesting. You know, there's so many quarterbacks there that I wouldn't mind seeing Cato come over. I mean, I think this guy has a lot of potential. He played pretty well in the preseason game, so maybe they're thinking about keeping him. But there's some quarterbacks over there that could be a decent backup or third string starter that you could groom into, you know, maybe a future starter in this league. So that Montreal thing sounds interesting to me, but maybe there's a Neglis guy that they're really high on that they can bring in. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but yeah, if we could bring in a guy from Montreal, I think that'd be good, unless it's Crompton, then I'm not a big fan of that.
I think we'll find out in the next couple of days.
Did they even dress Crompton in the preseason game? Because I don't remember seeing him.
I didn't watch it. I gotta be honest. I haven't really had a chance. Let's get, you know what, let's go right now. Let's get into these other preseason games. We'll stop our time with Jonathan Crompton. I've been told that he's like injured and is probably gonna retire. This is sort of the scuttlebutt. I don't know how true that is, because he's still on the roster. But yeah, I think of those like 47 quarterbacks that they dressed for that initial preseason game against Winnipeg. I don't think he was one of the ones that was in uniform.
No, I don't think so. You know, I didn't see the whole game. I was traveling at the time, but I saw some of it. And I don't remember seeing Crompton. This is a guy that was, you know, pegged to be the Montreal starter going forward last year, the year before. So he's really dropped off the map. And I wouldn't be surprised if he retired. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him again in the CFL. Because, yes, he had some okay games, but he never really impressed me. He never really had those good numbers. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him again.
So we have to preface this by saying we know we're talking about preseason games. So before we get angry tweets or angry comments or angry emails, we are aware that we're speaking about preseason football. But my kind of there's three takeaways that I took, team takeaways that I took from what I did see of this. The one is BC looked pretty darn good in their game against Saskatchewan. I might be wrong about Jonathan Jennings. It was weird. BC brought their first string in. The Argos did the same thing. They bring their first string in after they had allowed their second string to start the game. It was a very interesting choice to make, but Jennings came in and he looked pretty darn good. So I think we might, or at least I might be eating a little bit of crow on saying Jonathan Jennings, you know, being a pause on BC because of, I don't know how good he'd be. And the other two things are, I did not think Saskatchewan looked very good. I think that game was a reality check for a lot in Rider Nation. Again, even though it was a preseason game, I think we saw that team still has a ways to go. And the other one that I took away from all this is Winnipeg does not look very good. Again, I know it's preseason, but their number one unit, especially on offense, just didn't seem to really have it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it might be a case where they just need time to gel, but you're right. They did not look very good. I know in the Montreal game, they kind of put a whooping on the Alouettes after the first team players went out of the game. But, you know, you're not going to see those second and third guys play in regular season games. So they really need to get their first team offense off the ground, get it going good. You know, Willie didn't look that impressive. Overall, the offense didn't look that impressive for them. You know, they got all those new weapons. They have to gel. They have to use those new guys like Dressler and Smith and all those guys they signed in the offseason. So it might be just a case of them coming together as a unit, but it also could be a case of maybe they're just not the right pieces in place for them to be successful. We don't know yet. We'll find out in the regular season, but you're right. They did not look very good in the preseason game.
So those were my takeaways from the preseason game. Anything else that you saw in the games that you watched even a little bit of?
Well, I was impressed with the number one offense of the Alouettes. I mean, these guys are a talented bunch. Kevin Glenn looked good. The receivers looked good. They might have the best receiving core in the whole league. With Theron Carter coming back and SJ Green is still SJ Green. So, you know, I think their offense could be pretty powerful. And a lot of people are saying that this team is just a big mess, but I've been saying over the last couple of episodes, I don't see how all the talent on this team is going to be, you know, I don't see how they're going to be a terrible team. Now, we talked about the coaching before. Maybe Calvillo is coming into his own as an offensive coordinator. Maybe you just need to, you know, some time to really grasp that position. And, you know, Jim Pop hasn't been the best coach over the years, but, you know, maybe he's turned the corner too. So I was really impressed with their offense and their first team offense. And, you know, Ottawa too. Ottawa looked good with their first team offense. Burris looked good. Yes, it's the preseason, but he still had a lot of zip on his ball. He's still, you know, he looked really impressive. So maybe he's still the guy that he was last year. They've lost some weapons, but maybe they can really be a powerful offense again in the East. So those are a couple takeaways from the games. And I was impressed with BC as you were. So yeah, those are my takeaways from a couple preseason games this season so far.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch any of the Ottawa. They played Winnipeg, right? Yeah, the Ottawa-Winnipeg game. But yeah, from all reports, it does seem like Ottawa's offense is picking up where they left off. But
yeah, and another thing that another thing was, you know, William Powell went down for the running back for the Red Blacks, and this guy, his last name was Van.
Oh, Trayvon Van.
Yeah, and he looked really sharp as well. You know, they didn't really miss a beat in the running game. In fact, they even looked a little bit better with Van than they did with Powell. So maybe they have a really good backup there for running back for the Red Blacks.
Yeah, it could be like the Ticats from years ago when you'd go into the season thinking Jesse Lumsden was going to be the starter, and then he would inevitably get hurt, and they'd rotate through these guys. And remember DeAndre Cobb had a couple thousand-yard rushing seasons with this team, mm-hmm. and kind of came out of nowhere. I think he started the season as, like, the number four running back, and then week two he, like, bursts onto the scene against, I think it was BC, and he has, like, this massive game and scores a couple touchdowns. It's like, who the hell is this guy? Maybe Ottawa is in sort of the same thing with their running backs. Powell goes down, and he's out for the season. That's where my big butt was going to be. But Ottawa has now dealt with some injuries, and I want to kind of talk about some of the injuries and the notable cuts that we've seen in the last couple of days. William Powell is out for the season with a torn Achilles, and he was a guy that everyone, myself included, even though I'm not very high on the Red Blacks, I thought this kid was going to be in for a pretty big season. So to lose him, even if this Van kid works out, everyone was really high on Powell, so that's a pretty big blow. And they lost one of their starting offensive linemen. Nate McMillan is going to be out. He's been six games, but he's going to be out. The initial estimate is 8 to 10 weeks. That's a blow. This was a team that last year did not deal with injuries very frequently. They stayed remarkably healthy. So to lose two big name players like this in the preseason before, that's a pretty big blow to Ottawa's chances of defending their East crown.
Yeah. I mean, they let go Jeremiah Johnson as the running back, and he's a really good player, I think. And to lose Powell, it sucks for them. Maybe this new kid can come in and really do a great job, but we're not sure. Now, speaking of Jeremiah Johnson, he's in BC now. And I'm just going to say it right now. I think they're better off Jeremiah Johnson than they were with Andrew Harris. And, you know, I've, you know, kind of talked down Andrew Harris this whole time we've been doing this show, but I really believe that the running game is going to improve without him. It might seem crazy, but that's what I think.
Why do you think that?
I just do. I just don't think Andrew Hurst just seems slow to me. I'm just not high on him. I don't think he's going to have a big year in Winnipeg. I think they're going to struggle at the running game. So that I'm not sure why. I just don't really like him as a running back. And, you know, I might be completely wrong, but that's just my opinion.
Gut feeling, is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so. I just think that he's going to be stuffed a lot at the line of scrimmage like he was when he was with BC. I don't think he's going to have a great year.
Well, hey, you're allowed to have that opinion. You could be wrong. You could be right. You never know. Last year I sat here and said I thought Eric Rogers was a fluke, and he led the league in receiving yards, receiving touchdowns, and now he's with my favorite NFL team, the San Francisco 49ers. So clearly I was way off on that.
Yeah, I mean, Rodgers had a great Grey Cup game the year before, and you just never knew. It was basically just one good game, and then last year he just tore it up. So that was hard to see that coming, that he would have such a great year last year.
So some other big news from around the league. The Edmonton Eskimos have lost their own player to a torn Achilles in cornerback John Ojo. That is a big blow, I think, to that Edmonton secondary.
You know, they've lost some players in the offseason. The biggest name is Grimes in the secondary. And to have this guy out for the season is not good for that defense. I'm sure they have some guys that can come in and replace him. But he was a stellar player last year, and he's going to be missed.
Yeah, that all-star half of that secondary of Grimes and Ojo both gone. Those are some big shoes to fill for Edmonton. And I think, you know, people were kind of knocking Edmonton down a little bit because of all the changes there. But this, I think, is another reason why people aren't as high on the Eskimos defending or being the consensus favorite heading into their championship defense season. Because that is a big blow. The other losses are a big blow. This Edmonton team could struggle to start the season.
Yeah, I could see that. There's just been so many changeovers in the players and the coaches. So, you know, Benavides is the defensive coordinator, and he's an experienced guy. He's had success in the past at the DC position. So, you know, I'm not sure he's good as Jones, good of mind as Jones, but I think he's a pretty good replacement. So he's gonna have a lot of pressure on his shoulders to really live up to what this defense has been for the last 2 years in Edmonton.
So a couple other big names that were released around the league. Montreal let go of linebacker Kyler Ellsworth. They also let go of Jerry Rice Jr. Obviously, he's a guy who never accomplished anything in the CFL. I bring him up strictly because he is, obviously, as his name would suggest, the son of the greatest receiver that ever lived, Jerry Rice, former San Francisco 49er, Oakland Raider, all that sorts of stuff. So I thought that maybe, you know, they had a lot of success with Daron Carter, who is the son, as, you know, Rod Black would be happy to tell you every time Daron Carter's on the field, the son of NFL Hall of Famer Chris Carter. I thought maybe Jerry Rice Jr. would get a little bit of an opportunity, but I guess his CFL career, at least for the moment, is over. And Toronto released Chad Kackert and quarterback Adrian McPherson. Any of these names kind of stand out to you as surprises? Obviously not Jerry Rice Jr.
No, but you never know. You know, the big name like that, he, you know, he might have made the team just on his name alone, but they didn't go that pass. So that's a good thing, I guess. You know, Montreal's had the reputation of bringing in guys just because of their name, a.k.a. Chad Johnson, a.k.a. Michael Sam.
Joey Porter, even though I thought Green. Oh, man, yeah. The list goes on and on of the guys they brought in, either NFL cuts or like Michael Sam, big name American guys that just never worked.
Not that they didn't see anything in those guys and thought they had potential to be stars in the CFL, but it was partially because of their big names. Chad Kackert kind of surprises me, I mean, he's had his injury troubles over the years, but every time he got back in there, I mean, he produced. Last year when he got in, he was running well. So it's kind of surprising to see him go. I don't know if that means the end of his career for him. I don't know if he wants to try to get on with another team, but maybe coaching is in his future, because I know that he had some kind of position for a bit with the Argos. And Ellsworth had a really good season filling in for Bear Woods, so I'm kind of surprised to see him go at the linebacker position for the Alouettes. So those are a couple of the guys that kind of surprised me.
Yeah, I think with Kackert, I really think that his career is over, and I think he will, like he did last time, he had that great Grey Cup, and then he came back the following year, and I believe it was 2013 where he got hurt, and it was a really bad, I want to say it was an ankle ankle injury, and he just never really – he was always good, but he never really came back to being that player he was previous to that. I think this is just a case of his body. His body just can't do it anymore, and I think there's no doubt in my mind. I believe he was the strength and conditioning coach during that retirement he had with the Argos. Then he came out of retirement because he thought he could play again. I could very easily see that happening again. To be honest with you, I know that I've seen Red Blacks fans out there wondering, with the injury to Powell, could they bring Kackert in? Inevitably, we're going to see some Ticats fans talk about the Ticats bringing in Kackert, and I don't think either of those are a possibility. I think the more likely of the two would be Kackert would come to Hamilton, kind of similar to Chad Owens, where he'd want to stay where he's comfortable, where he's familiar, and Hamilton and Toronto, obviously it's very similar. But I want to that's not going to happen. I think Kackert, we're going to see here in the next few days that he has retired from football and he has taken a position with the Argos in some capacity. He looks like just one of those guys, kind of not in the same like longevity vein, but kind of similar to Pinball Clemens, where he just looks like a lifelong Argo. I know we said the same about Chad Owens, and now we're a week away from watching Chad Owens play in Toronto in a Hamilton uniform. But yeah, I don't see Kackert going anywhere else. I think he sticks in Toronto in some capacity.
Yeah, that's the way I'm leaning as well.
So we got a game to talk about, Michael. And this is a preview for a game. We're back doing game previews. Did one last week. Let's do another one this week. This one you're actually going to get to watch, because this one, thanks to the good folks of the Hamilton Tiger Cats and their continued efforts to be at the forefront of technology, are going to be live streaming this game on Ticats.ca again. I cannot applaud them more. I think we did this last year when they did the same thing in the same preseason game against Ottawa. We applauded them for doing this. Again, this is a great move by the team. It allows fans like yourself who don't live in the city or can't get to the game a chance to watch at least one preseason game that TSN isn't going to show. So kudos to them for doing this. So now I can actually ask you, as opposed to last week, what are you going to look for in this game?
The second game of the preseason is always more of the starters playing for a longer period of time. So I'm looking at how Mazzoli performs. I want to see him have a really strong game and, you know, put up some great numbers and really, really show that you're the starter for this team going forward until Claros comes back. And I want to see Gable perform well too. You know, he's, as we've discussed a lot, he's had his injury troubles, and I want to see him back to the Gable that we saw him in his rookie year and the start of his second year. So those are the two guys that I'm really keeping an eye on. And also I want to see what Spencer Watt has, you know, coming off that bad injury last year. I want to see if he still has that speed. I want to see if he's still the same player that he was when he was with Toronto. So those are just a couple, three guys that I'm going to keep a close eye on offense. And I just like to say that I think it's great that they're streaming the game. You know, they seem to be the only team that's doing that. I'm not sure if there's any other teams that are streaming preseason games, but they did a great job last year. It was really professionally done last year, and I had no complaints about the broadcast last preseason. So I'm looking forward to watching the game on the Ticats website again this year.
Yeah, I'll be live in attendance, obviously, so I will be looking forward to getting your thoughts on the stream again this year. Mm-hmm. If the first time went off essentially without a hitch, I can't imagine a year after the fact they're doing it again. They probably will make it even better. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on that. I too am looking forward to the starters. Now, you brought up Spencer Watt. Now, he did play against Toronto. He did have a nice catch, took a lick, and got up and kind of got in the face of the Argo player who hit him, but it looked like maybe they were former teammates at some point. Kind of like, I'm back in the game type of thing. So I will be looking at him. But I'm looking at all these number one players, all these starting players that didn't play last week. I'm looking to see Simone Lawrence. Let's see what he can do side by side with Alex Hoffman Ellis and Johnny Sears Jr. Johnny Sears Jr. looks like he's going to be the replacement for Eric Harris. And he came within a cat's pubic hair of catching an interception against the Argos. And it's funny because he dropped it and he started doing pushups. It was kind of funny. So I'm looking to see that linebacking core, how they'll do with Lawrence in there. I'm looking to see Chad Owens. I want to see Chad Owens play in a Ticats uniform. Again, I don't know how much he's going to play, but I want to see him get that first catch. I want to see, you know what? I want to see kind of the reaction that fans give Chad Owens when we hear over the loudspeaker, like Mazzoli back to like connects 10 yard out to Chad Owens. Are fans going to cheer? Are they going to boo? Let's see that. T.J. Gable, obviously want to see a little bit of him. The Ticats did not run the football much. I think they had 12 carries and they had one rush, one called rush to a running back in the first half. So I want to see maybe with Gable back there, they're probably not going to give him a ton of work, but let's see him get into the flow of the game. Let's see him get a couple of carries. Let's see if the Ticats will actually try to do a running game this year. As we've known since Ken Austin's been there, they've been one of the teams that have run the ball the least. Luke Tasker, want to see him. Andy Fantuz, want to see him. And if he's healthy and can play, I want to see Ted Laurent. So I want to look at all these starting players that I didn't get a chance to see last week.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Fantuz looks like if he still has, you know, he's never had a lot of speed, but just to see how he's performing early on in the season. So, yeah, I'm looking at him too. And there's some guys in the secondary that I'll watch, keep an eye on them, see how I want to see John Chick perform well. You know, I want to see that motor going like you saw last week in the preseason game. So there's a lot of things to look for in this last preseason game with all the starters getting more time. So I'm pretty excited to watch this game on Friday.
Yeah, I'm looking at the secondary too. I'm probably going to concentrate a lot on them when the defense is on the field, seeing who they have in there. Maybe I'll be smart and print out our depth chart or something before I go to the game this week. I should have done that when I went to Toronto, but I was an idiot and didn't do it. Maybe I'll do that this week. I want to see how some of these new guys, as we said earlier, there's some injuries that they've suffered in the secondary. Let's see who they might put in there and who we might see as possible guys that we've never heard of. Like we've said before, Delvin Bro was a nobody. We did not know who he was when he came in and became an all-star, and now he's with New Orleans Saints. Emmanuel Davis was an all-star last year, and it took him a while to get going. We didn't know who he was when he first signed. So maybe there's some diamond in the rough that we could perhaps see in the secondary. And the last thing I'm kind of looking for is I'm looking at this continued kicking battle. Like I said, in our game recap of the Argos, I'm looking to see maybe if they're going to have these guys have a chance to kick into the wind, kick with the wind in their face. I want to see that. I want to see how these guys handle the wind at Tim Hortons Field, because outside of every stadium they play in, these guys, whoever wins this job, is going to be kicking the majority of their kickoffs, punts, and field goals in Hamilton at Tim Hortons Field. I want to see how they sort of deal with the weather here. I'm hoping it's a night game, so it's going to be maybe a little bit chillier than normal, but I'm hoping maybe we're going to get some wind, not too much, because I don't like the wind blowing in my face when I'm watching a football game, but I'd like to see maybe a little bit of inclement weather, especially wind wise to see what these kickers can do in those adverse conditions.
Yeah, and I'm also looking forward to Simone Lawrence taking out Burris's knees again. So that's gonna be good.
Well, I just saw as much as we'd all like to see that, obviously we're joking, I just saw it looks like Ottawa's not going to bring any of their starters to Hamilton, which...
Oh, really?
Yeah, which kind of makes it hard for the Ticats then to evaluate what they're doing. But I understand Ottawa. Why would they bring... teams that usually put the road play... Like, we've been lucky we've had the home preseason game has usually been the second of the two in the last few years. I think the home one was the first one last year, but I can kind of understand. I think, you know, short rest for Ottawa. They played Monday and then they got to play Friday, so it's going to be tough to get everyone healthy. They don't want anyone being fatigued and maybe getting hurt. So yeah, from what I saw, it looks like they're going to keep a lot of their, if not all of their starters at home. So that kind of sucks for the Ticats to evaluate their guys, but Ottawa's doing what's best for them, and I understand that. So chances are that the Ticats are going to win this game pretty handily, but wins and losses don't really matter in the preseason. However, if they you know, lose this game or somehow don't look good, then maybe this is something that might cause some worry when we sit down next week to talk about it.
Yeah, it might be a bit of a wake-up call. You know, we got to get things together going into the regular season. So I'm not worried about win-loss too much. But yeah, it'll be tough to, like you said, evaluate how well the Ticats players play if they're playing against second and third string guys. But like you said, I understand why they're not bringing all their starters to Hamilton. But it would have been nice to see, you know, starters against starters to start the game, you know, for the first half. But that's not to be. So, you know, it's not to be.
So we're going to have to wait until sometime in October before Hamilton fans can boo Henry Burris once again. So before we get out of here, let's get to some questions. You up for some questions, Mike?
Yeah, let's do it.
I got a pair of questions from the same guy, 99AA Tigers coach on Twitter, sent us a couple of questions. So let's get to the first one. He asks, Jeff Matthews is young and crazy talented. Can he learn to avoid crucial errors, or is he just not wired that way? We talked a little bit about Matthews earlier. What are your kind of thoughts on this?
I think he can. I think that's a thing that can be pounded into his head by Austin. I think he can cut down on his interceptions or his fumbles or whatnot. And I think he can become a solid, you know, maybe not a starting quarterback, but a solid backup, and can be dependable when put in there. So he just needs to, he needs more experience. He needs to learn the game a bit better and not turn over the ball as much. I think that'll help him with his turnovers. So yeah, I still have high hopes for this guy, and I think he can improve in that way.
Yeah, I think I gave a lot of my Matthews thoughts earlier, but I'll reiterate them here. I do think this is a tough question to answer, because I do like Jeff Matthews. like I said, there's been some times when he's made some plays that I've been like, holy smokes, like, I don't know if anyone else can make those. And then he does the next, very next play. He's like, why are you doing that? He just seems like, I mentioned earlier that he plateaued in his development, and I hope that's not the case, but it kind of is what it looks like. You'd think that in the second year, he would feel a lot more comfortable in the pocket with his decision making, but he still seems tentative, just like he did last year. And as we just talked about, he's made a lot of great plays, but he makes these bad ones. He's very frustrating because you look at him and he has the tools. He has the big arm. He's not a scrambler, but we saw last year he's not afraid to run if he has to. But it seems like the mental aspect of the game, that where they talk about the game slows down for you, hasn't really happened with him yet. I think until that happens, we're still going to see the same player we see now. I don't think it's necessarily that he's just wired to make errors. I just think that he hasn't gotten to the point where the mental aspect of the game has not slowed down enough for him yet. And will he get there? Hopefully. I don't know. If he will, but the thing is, like he is, at worst, he's the third best quarterback on this team. So he's still miles ahead in his development over Corey Harris, who's now injured and not playing, and Jake Waters. So it's not like he's in any worry of losing his starting spot, or not starting spot, but a spot on the team. Like he's going to be on this team. He's going to be the primary backup to Jeremiah Mazzoli, and then he'll go back to being the third stringer when Calero's comes back. So hopefully he can continue to develop, and hopefully he can get over these critical errors that he makes at the worst possible times. But this is kind of just a wait and see thing with me.
Yeah, we won't know until he gets more playing time.
Yeah, until he gets playing time against starters, against like. Mm-hmm. And the thing is,
who knows if that'll even happen? You know, we might not know the answer to this question ever. So yeah, we'll just have to see.
It's true. Like if you think about it, as Tiger Cat fans, I kind of don't want to know if he develops into a starting caliber quarterback, especially if he's develops into one here, because that means that Zach Caleros either has left or he's gotten hurt again. I kind of want Matthews to be, like you said, a very good backup quarterback. And if that's what he becomes, and he can be that here, and he rarely sees the field, I'm okay with that. He's probably not. He's a competitor. He probably wants to be on the field. Maybe he has to go somewhere else to do that. I don't say I want him to go somewhere else to do that out of any ill will, but clearly Zach Caleros last year was going to win MOP, and this Ticats team very easily could have won the Grey Cup if he doesn't get hurt. And we're not even having this conversation about Jeff Matthews because we don't really ever see him play.
So I just throw a random question out there. If Mazzoli lights the world on fire for the Tiger Cats in the first, whatever, 4 or 5 games, is there any QB controversy? Is there any, you know, talk from the fan base? Oh, maybe we should go with Mazzoli over Claros. You see that? I don't see it happening, but what do you think?
Well, I think there's always going to be someone out there who likes the backup better. I'm sure in the years that Danny McManus was leading this team to Grey Cups, there was someone out there saying, well, why aren't they playing whomever the backup quarterback was? I don't even know who it was. Granted, it was that long ago, but at the same time, I don't know who the backup quarterback was for the Ticats back in the late 90s. But
Cody Ledbetter or something?
Is that who it was? Sure. Maybe. That's a name I remember.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be someone out there who thinks that, there's a quarterback controversy. I think this is Claros' team, like you. As soon as he's healthy enough to play, he will play. I don't really see much of a quarterback controversy. The worst thing is that Mazzoli plays really well, and then maybe the team can parlay that into a deal for, so you know what I mean? Like, it's not, Ottawa fans are out there talking about how they have this great 1-2 quarterback tandem, and they do, and how that's a good thing. We've seen quarterbacks get hurt, especially last year, a ton. So having a really talented backup quarterback is not the worst thing in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't see any, no matter what, this is Claros' team, and he will be the starter as soon as he's able to perform.
Yeah, the only thing I could possibly see where this is even an issue is if Mazzoli is putting up MOP numbers and the team is undefeated when Caleros comes back. But I think that could just be a case of they won't rush Caleros back onto the field. But I think that's highly unlikely that'll happen. I don't think this team gets to, let's say Caleros comes back after 6 weeks, or let's even say he comes back, say Labor Day. We'll be pessimistic and say he doesn't come back till halfway through the year. I don't think this team's going to be undefeated going into Labor Day. I'd be ecstatic if they were. But I think that's really the only case where you could say, you know what, maybe Zach has, Mazzoli has earned this job simply by his play, but I think that's a long shot.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
So second question, same guy. He asks, after a week of camp and one preseason game, are there any lesser known players that you see that may have a big impact this season? This has got to be a little bit difficult for you to answer because you haven't seen any of camp and didn't really get a chance to catch the preseason game. Do you still have an answer to this or Would you like to defer until maybe we watch next week?
Yeah, I'll keep an eye out next week to see some, you know, unknown players that might be rising stars for the Ticats. But I'm going to defer to you because you saw the team live and I didn't. So, yeah, you answer that question for me.
I do have one guy. I think to start off, it's going to be tough for any young player, either an American free agent or a draft pick, like any of these unknown guys, to make a big impact on this team. This is a veteran-laden team with returning players that have been there, that have done that, and they're going to be the ones that really make this team go. It's going to be your Simone Lawrences and guys like that that are really going to be the ones that make this team click and get them to where they think they should be. That said, there was one defensive back in the game against the Argos, number 43, Chris Davis, who really, really impressed me. He finished the game with 3 tackles, but he seemed to always be around the ball. It seemed like every time someone would catch a pass or they'd go for a run, Davis was there. Now, I did see that Davis now looks to be in the mix to start in the secondary, which to me is very interesting because he was in the second half against the Argos, so he was a second, third team guy. But due to the injuries, they've given him a bump in his depth chart status there. So we're probably going to see him against Ottawa. Unfortunately, we're not going to see him against Ottawa's number one, so we're not going to get a great idea of me, if this guy can fill this role. But if there was one guy, there was one young player, one unknown player that I would be telling fans to keep an eye on based on what I've seen, it is Chris Davis, number 43 for the Hamilton Ticats. So when you're watching the game on Friday, Mike, make sure that he's a guy that, if you can, you pay attention to him because he could be a guy that makes an impact.
Yeah, I'll try to keep an eye on him. It's hard when you're watching on TV or a live stream because it's hard to keep an eye on the secondary like you would in a
Live if atmosphere. You can't really keep your eye on. Yeah, it is pretty tough.
Yeah, but I'll try my best to keep an eye on him and anyone else that pops out to me that's a new guy.
Yeah, maybe we'll revisit this question next week. Yeah. And you can kind of give your thoughts on guys lesser known or unknown guys that you saw in this game against Ottawa that kind of stood out to you. And I will do my best to keep an eye on Davis. Sorry, every time I always want to say Eric Harris for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know why his name is stuck in my head. But I'll keep an eye on Davis and I'll come back next week and maybe we'll have some more good things to say about the young man.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's it, Mike. We are done for the week. Man, we are one preseason game away. And we're pretty much, as we sit here and record this on Wednesday morning, we are like a little over a week out from real live football. And as we get closer and closer, I think I can speak for you and say the excitement is starting to build. I was excited last week. I'm getting back into what I consider my second home, Tim Hortons Field, on Friday. So I'm excited for that. And then, bam, we're off and running regular season CFL football. It's an exciting time.
Yeah, it's going to be great to see that first game on Thursday. Just, you know, a packed BMO, one of the greatest rivalries in sports, the Ticats and the Argos, to kick off the season. It's just a wonderful way to start the season. So, you know, I'm ecstatic that we're only a week and one day away from regular season football.
And you and I next week get to sit down and record our season preview show, which means that we get to make asses out of ourselves by making predictions that will unlikely come true. Although I was pat myself on the back, I do remember last year I said Saskatchewan would not be a very good team, and they were a lot worse than I thought they would be, but they were still bad, and I will hang my hat on that until the day I die, because that was one of my favorite predictions, because I had everybody, especially all those Rider fans out there, call me a complete buffoon for saying they wouldn't be very good, and it was kind of nice at the end of the year to be like, I kind of told you, I knew, like, I may not be right all the time, and I may not be perfect, but sometimes you can just, things are so obvious that they slap you in the face with it. The Riders being bad last year was one of those things. Yeah. Maybe we're going to peg ourselves, maybe we're going to get something right this year, who knows, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we made those predictions a couple weeks ago with the standings and who's going to be in the Grey Cup and all that stuff, but I think there's going to be a couple tweaks on my part in who's going to finish first and second and in the West and the East, so yeah, we'll get those predictions set in stone. They'll be the final ones and see what happens going forward.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be making a few tweaks myself after seeing some stuff over the first 5 games of the CFL preseason. And then when we sit down next week, we'll have the entire preseason behind us. The rosters will be set and we'll be ready to go.
Yeah, real football.
All right. So don't forget, subscribe to the show on iTunes or listen to it at 3downnation.com. You want a question answered, please feel free to hit Mike or myself up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter digits, as always.
Mike_Ticats.
I am Josh Smith_82. And, you know, as always, post those questions in the comment section of 3Down Nation. So that is Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.